I was just reading in the newspaper that some scientists, somewhere, are quite excited at having successfully sequenced the genome of the sea urchin. And they've discovered that it, the sea urchin, is remarkably similar to us, humans. Genetically, anyhow. And the article goes on and on about how incredible their immune systems are and how we might use our discoveries on how those immune systems work to create new drugs to combat human diseases, since we are so close, and so on. But I see something here that's worth getting excited about that they're missing. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily want to be the one who ended up covered in spikes, but I really know a few people who would be quite interested in trying out such a look. And now, thanks to the miracle of science, we are one step closer to making this happen. I'm only trying to share. Good evening. It's Sunday, the 12th of November, 2006, and it's Miette's Bedtime Story Podcast. The Picnic of Maurice the Cat, as told by a Croatian nobleman, by Clemens Brentano. My estate is situated in a lonely spot, a half hour from the Turkish border, in a swampy wood where there is a most glorious and exasperating profusion of everything, including nightingales, which always wake you out of your sleep before dawn. Last summer the creatures had the effrontery to come so close and in such numbers that once, in a towering rage, I held my chamber-pot at them. But I was soon to acquire a housemate who knew how to deal with them, and who delivered me from the pests. It was 3 years ago today, in the morning, that I set out for my fowling preserve, armed with a broadsword, a good double-barreled rifle, and a pair of double pistols, for I was on the lookout for a Turkish poacher and game-dealer to whom, for some time, I had been losing a lot of valuable game. When I warned him to keep out, he had replied insolently that I couldn't stop him from coming into my wood, and that he meant to go on hunting right under my very nose. When I reached the fowling preserve, I found all the springes and snares I had set emptied, and realized that the rogue must have got there ahead of me. As I was resetting my traps, seething with rage, a big black cat strolled out of the bushes. It came up to me, purring, and behaved in so ingratiating a fashion that its fur caught my eye, and I began to stroke it, in the hopes of making a pet of it, and perhaps of getting a cup for myself out of its winter coat. In summer, I always have a kind of live winter wardrobe in my hunting grounds. 4 pairs of stout leather breeches are always running about the place in the form of live billy goats, and among them is a magnificent bagpipe which, even now as a live billy goat, is displaying such musical talents that the candidates for the various trouser legs, the moment he comes bleating into their midst, began dancing and keeping step with one another, as if they were already aware that they were destined one day to dance with my legs in Hungarian fashion to this same bagpipe. I had designs of a similar nature upon the black cat, and, partly because he was as black as a moor, partly because he had the most superb Maurice or manners, I gave him the name of Maurice. The cat followed me home, and proved himself so proficient at mouse-catching and at getting along with my dogs, that I soon abandoned the idea of turning him out of his skin. Maurice was my constant companion, and slept at night on a leather chair beside my bed. Several things struck me as particularly odd about the animal. Every now and then I would try, for the fun of it, to get him to drink some wine from my glass, only to meet with the most strenuous resistance. But once I caught him in the cellar, dangling his tail in the bunghole, and afterward licking it with the greatest gusto. Maurice also differed from the other cats in that,
whereas his kind usually has an aversion to water, he was very fond of taking a bath. All these eccentricities made Maurice famous in my neighbourhood. I allowed him the run of the place. He hunted on his own, and cost me nothing but coffee, which he guzzled with inordinate pleasure. So I had him as my constant companion and roommate for some time, when, for the last 2 days and nights before Christmas, he failed to appear. It had already occurred to me that some poacher, perhaps even my neighbour at the Turkish border, might have shot Maurice down, or caught him, and for this reason I sent one of my men over to the game dealer to see if I could find out anything about this matter. But the man came back with the news that the game dealer knew nothing about my cat, that he had just returned from a trip to Constantinople, bringing his wife a collection of handsome cats. That, as it happened, he was glad to have heard about my fine animal, and would try his best to get his hands on it, as he was in need of a pasha for his seraglio. Great was my annoyance when I received this news on Christmas Eve, and I longed all the more to recover my Morris, since I did not care to lose him to the Turkish rogue. I went to bed early that evening, because at midnight I planned to attend Mass at the church, an hour's ride away. My servant awakened me at the proper time. I strapped on my pistols and sword, and slung my double-barreled rifle, loaded with buckshot, over my shoulder. Then I set out. It was the coldest winter night I have ever experienced. I was all bundled up like Father Christmas himself. My smouldering tobacco pipe froze up several times, the fur around my neck stiffened from my frosty breath like a porcupine, and the hard snow crackled under my boots. The wolves were howling all around my property, and I ordered my men to go out after them. I had come out on the open field beneath a starlit sky, and could already see in the distance an oak tree that stood on an island in the middle of a frozen pond, and marked the halfway point of my expedition to the village where the church was situated. Suddenly I heard extraordinary music. For a moment I thought it must be some band of peasants who were whiling away the time on their way to church by playing a bagpipe. So I quickened my pace a little, in order to catch up with them. But the closer I got, the wilder this curious music became, until it finally dissolved into a wail. I had nearly reached the tree before I realized that the sounds were coming from out of its branches. I took my gun in hand, cocked it, and crept across the solid pond to the oak. And what did I see? What did I hear? My hair stood on end. The whole tree was alive with howling cats, and at the very top was enthroned my cat, Morris, his back arched, playing in the most wretched fashion on a bagpipe, while the other cats, uttering blood-curling cries, were dancing about him in the branches. For a while I stood there transfixed with horror, but soon the sound of the bagpipe produced such a curious twitching in my legs that I too began to dance, and very nearly tumbled into a hole that had been cut in the ice by some fisherman. But just then the church bell rang out through the starry night, and I came to my senses. Seizing my rifle, I fired the entire load into the midst of the infamous dancing chorus, and instantly the whole crew shot down from the oak like hail and swept over me like a swarm of bees. So violent was the impact, I slipped on the ice and fell flat on my back. When I picked myself up, the field was clear, and I was amazed to find not a single cat, wounded or dead, under the tree. I was so terrified and addled by the episode that I gave up all ideas of going to church. I hurried home and fired my pistols several times to summon my servants. At the signal, they quickly appeared, and I related to them my adventure. "Your lordship can set his mind at rest," said one of them, an experienced old fellow. "We shall soon find the cats that your lordship shut." Greatly disquieted, I went into the house, and after drinking some warm wine to calm myself after my terrifying experience, I retired to bed. Toward morning, becoming aware of a noise, I awakened out of an uneasy sleep, and saw lying there beside me, as usual, on my leather chair, my confounded cat, Morris, with his fur all singed. A black rage came over me, and I began to tremble in every limb. "Passavano citterum mentete," I screamed. "Infamous witch's scum, are you back again?" And I reached for a new pitchfork that was standing beside my bed, but the beast lunged at my throat and tried to strangle me. I shouted for help. My servants came rushing to my assistance with drawn sabres and slashed out at my Morris in no uncertain fashion. He shot up one wall and down the other, finally broke open a window pane, and plunged down into the woods below, where it would have been futile to try to pursue him. But we were quite sure that Sir Morris had received a sufficient number of sabre wounds to keep him from ever blowing the bagpipe. I was horribly scratched, and my neck and face swelled up in a hideous fashion. I sent for the Slavonian dairymaid, who worked for me, to have her cook me a poultice, but she was nowhere to be found, and I was forced to drive to the village, where there was an army surgeon. When we reached the oak, where the nocturnal concert had taken place, we saw a figure up in the branches, crying piteously for help. I soon recognized Lagda, the Slavonian maid. She was hanging half-frozen by her skirt, which had been caught in the branches, and her blood was dripping down on the snow. We also saw bloody tracks leading away from the tree into the woods. I knew then how matters stood with the Slavonian girl. I had her carried to the wagon so that her body would not touch the ground, and securely bound. Then we drove off at top speed to the village with the witch. As soon as I arrived at the surgeon's house, the vice-governor and the local priest were summoned immediately. All the evidence was taken down, and the maid, Lacta, was cast into prison. Luckily for her, she died of the bullet wound she had received, otherwise she would certainly have been burned at the stake. She was a beautiful figure of a woman, and her skeleton was sent to Budapest and placed in a natural history cabinet as a specimen of fine bone structure. She repented sincerely and died weeping bitterly. On her testimony, several other females in the district were to have been arrested, but two of them were found dead in their beds, and the rest had fled. After I recovered, I had to make an expedition across the Turkish border with a district commission. We reported to the authorities our complaints against the wild game dealer, only to find that we had stepped out of the frying pan into the fire. We were told that the game dealer, together with his wife and various Turkish, Serbian, and Slavonian girls, had returned home with bullet and sabre wounds, and soon after had died, stating on his deathbed that on his way back from a wedding he had been attacked by me at the border and brought to this sorry pass. While we were listening to this accusation, a crowd of people gathered about, and the wife of the game dealer, with several women and children bandaged from head to foot, raised a loud outcry against us. The judge told us that he could not protect us, that we must make our getaway as best we could. We dashed out into the courtyard and leaped onto our horses. The district commissioner was put into the middle, I placed myself at the head of the 6 hussars who had accompanied us, and we galloped out of the village at such a pace that we got off with nothing worse than a few stones, a few wild shots, and a volley of Turkish curses. The Turks pursued us over the frontier, but were dealt with by the hussars so effectively that a few of them at least will have given a report of the outcome to the game-dealer in Mohammed's paradise. When I arrived home, the first thing I did was to examine my bagpipe, which I found lying under my bed. It was punctured with 3 bullet holes. So it was Morris, who had been playing my own bagpipe, and had been protected by it from my shot. Nor was this the end of my troubles over this miserable affair. Again and again I was called in to give evidence. One commissioner after another came out to my estate and had to be entertained in fine style. The Turks complained of frontier violation, and before the legal fuss finally died down, I had to pay out several more pieces of game and a considerable sum of money, and my servants and I were made to testify once more under oath. To add to this, I was examined several times by the county doctor to determine the state of my sanity, and he could not be persuaded to make up his mind until after I sent him a couple pairs of double pistols, and his wife a strip of black fox fur, and several excellent game roasts. Then at last, the matter was dropped.